Welcome to Circle of Blue Radio Series 5 and 15, where we're asking global thought leaders 5 questions in 15 minutes, more or less. These are experts working in journalism, science, communication design, and water. I'm J. Carl Ganter. Today's program is underwritten by Traverse Internet Law, tech-savvy lawyers representing internet and technology companies. Our guest today is Charles Fishman, an award-winning investigative journalist and author of the best-selling book, The Walmart Effect. We caught up with Fishman during his tour for The Big Thirst, his book focusing on water issues around the world. In the course of reporting about water to write The Big Thirst, Fishman has stood at the bottom of a 500,000-gallon sewage tank, sampled water directly from the springs in San Pellegrino, Italy, and carried water on his head for 3 kilometers with a group of Indian villagers. So, Charles, as a journalist working at Fast Company, how did the water issue pop onto your radar?
I grew up in the 60s and 70s, so I grew up in the era before the business of bottled water. Literally, for those who are too young to understand, until very, very recently, there was no bottled water industry. There were no little bottles of water with brand names on them. And so I wrote a story about the business of bottled water, and where, how it is that we came to pay 3,000 times the price in a convenience store, what the water costs at our home. Why is there water from Fiji anyway? I did a little research on Fiji, and it turns out that 53% of the people in Fiji do not have clean, safe drinking water. So it's easier for someone in the United States to walk into a convenience store and get clean, safe water from Fiji than it is for most of the people in Fiji to get clean, safe water from Fiji. And that just sort of seemed, you know, to be incredible. And so I ended up writing a book not about bottled water. In fact, bottled water is a small part of the book, but a book about this moment in time with water, which I think is a really important moment in time, and how our relationship with water is about to change.
Why is it important to understand and consider our water future?
You know, of course, I'm a journalist, so I always think that what I'm writing about is the most important thing at that moment. But I think I stumbled into writing about water at what I've come to think of as a turning point in our relationship to water. It's interesting, exactly 100 years ago, around 1910, our relationship to water changed at that moment. There was what I think of as the first water revolution. Human beings discovered that you could clean water relatively simply and make it safe to drink just by running it through a sand filter and then adding a little bit of chlorine to it. And that changed municipal water, not just in the U.S., but around the world. In the U.S., it helped increase the life expectancy of ordinary people 40%. It increased life expectancy from 47 years to 63 years, just clean water. I think we're on the verge of another revolution like that, about a different topic, and that is, we've sort of lived through 100 years where water has been unlimited, safe, and free in the developed world. Yeah, everybody gets a water bill, but it's so small that no one manages their water use based on price. And we never think, there's never a chance that the water's gonna run out of the tap. And people love to sort of argue about the quality of their tap water in their city compared to other cities. They actually like to run it down typically, but, in fact, the quality of tap water in the U.S. is incredibly safe. I think the era when those three things will be present together is over. I don't think we'll have unlimited, safe, and free together going forward. We'll have more than enough water to drink, but it won't be so cheap that we never think about it. And I think we'll have more than enough water to water the lawns and wash the cars, but I hope that 20 years from now, we are not watering our lawns with purified drinking water or flushing our toilets with purified drinking water, which is a kind of absurdity. It's like, you know, anybody who's old enough remembers the era when we used to smoke cigarettes on airplanes. Well, if somebody lights up a cigarette on an airplane today, you know, you tackle them and summon the air marshal, right? The idea that we flush our toilets with purified drinking water is just absurd. It's just an old habit. So I think we're on the cusp of moving from this era of abundant water, the golden age of water, to an era when we'll use less water and we'll use water more smartly. We'll use the right water for the right purpose and we'll pay the right price for it. So we won't have to dry out our lives, but we will change how we think about water and how we use it.
You're talking about change. Well, what is it that's going to motivate this change in our perspective about water?
That's a great question. What's going to motivate the change? What's going to motivate people to change their behavior? And I would say there are two things that are going to motivate the change. The most important thing is scarcity, is water itself, right? So when scarcity comes on with typical products, gasoline is something people are really familiar with, of course, the price goes up. Right, and that's how you know that supplies aren't what everybody would like them to be, and they're managing supply by price. People use less because it costs more. I just filled up the tank of our minivan while we were up here in Traverse City visiting. $70, to me, $70 is still a lot of money. You know, $70 is like the cable bill. It's twice the water bill. It's just a tank of gas that'll be gone in 2 days, you know. The price of water doesn't change when scarcity comes on, but people know about scarcity because there ends up being this huge discussion of what the state of the reservoirs is, what the state of the river is, what the state of the lakes are, and instead of managing it by price, which actually wouldn't be a bad idea, people end up imposing rules. The problem is that when scarcity isn't episodic, when it ends up being a long-term condition, Las Vegas, Atlanta 2 years ago, then you really need rules that help people change their behavior. Rules like different kinds of plumbing requirements. Rules like Orange County, Florida, the county where Orlando sits, 25 years ago changed the rules about outdoor lawn watering. They required all new homes, businesses, schools, and parks to use reuse water, and they created facilities for making reuse water and putting it back into a separate plumbing system. They didn't require anybody who lived in Orlando or Orange County to change what they were doing at that moment, but going forward from 25 years ago, everybody knew had to install a second set of pipes, purple pipes. Orange County, Florida now pumps every day exactly the same amount of reuse water for landscaping as potable drinking water for indoor use. Well, that's incredible. That's a huge behavior change. But they didn't, you know, swat people on the knuckles with a ruler. They didn't impose fines. They changed the rules about how water was going to be used in the community. They also didn't change everything by a week from next Friday or by a year from when the rules were changed. It takes a long time for a community to change. But now, most of the people who live in Central Florida use reuse water for lawn watering, and they think it's absurd to use drinking water on the lawns because they never have. So I think scarcity and some foresight, some imagining what we want the world to look like 25 years ago, given the nature of our water supplies, the growth of population, shifting climate and shifting water availability, I don't think our relationship to water is going to change overnight, but I think 20 years from now, we will think about the water we use every day differently. I think scarcity is going to be the primary motivator, and I think communities will impose different kinds of rules to motivate different kinds of behavior.
So we'll continue to see water scarcity as a primary motivator for policy. What about infrastructure? In the book, you identify how much water is wasted by our aging water system. Has scarcity encouraged municipalities to revamp their water infrastructure like Orange County, Florida, or do public funds dry up before water is even considered?
I actually live just outside of Philadelphia, but the city of Philadelphia is a good example of water infrastructure issues. Philadelphia has 3,200 miles of water mains, and they replace 20 miles a year. They're on a 160-year replacement cycle. Mr. Fishman, we can take care of your water mains in 2110, but if that looks like it's not going to be a convenient year, we'll take care of you in 2147. I mean, that's just insane. 160-year replacement cycle. How fast do we upgrade the cell phone network? when was the last time anybody thought about upgrading water infrastructure in most communities? Most people have water meters that need to be read by hand. Someone comes along and uses a little metal pole and pops up the water meter and reads the water meter by eye and then walks to the next one, puts the lid down and walks to the next one. The average long-haul truck for Walmart has more intelligence built into it, reporting back through the network to Walmart headquarters, than the average water system does to the people who run it. The water systems are really old. They're at least 50 years old, and in many places they're 100 years old, and Philadelphia is proud to say they have water mains in use that are 150, 160 years old. That's kind of amazing. There is something lovely about that, but if you saw the inside of a 60 or 70 or 80 year old water pipe, you wouldn't say, boy, I'm happy to be drinking out of that. And there's no intelligence built into the system in the sense that water system managers have no ability to understand, for instance, where water is leaking. Overall, the US water system leaks 16% of the water it pumps. Every week, we lose an entire day's water. It just dribbles out into the ground. Unfortunately, you know, in a place like New York or Detroit or LA or Houston or Orlando, there's not four big leaks that need to be fixed. Every one of those cities has 1,000 leaks that are relatively small. But if the system had sensors on it that could tell water managers how the pipes were doing, you could fix those leaks. You could get the easiest water to get back, the cheapest water to get back, is water we've already got that we let leak away before it even gets to a customer. So the water system does a great job day to day, but in fact, it's way out of date compared to lots of other systems. It's hidden underground. It's literally invisible. And people often say, well, gosh, man, look at the country. You know, we're in desperate shape. There's no money for water. Today, we spend $21 billion a year on bottled water as consumers, just in the U.S. We spend $29 billion a year maintaining the entire water system. So if we just cut back our bottled water consumption by, say, 50%, we could increase the amount we spent on the water system by a third. There's not only money to be spent on the water system, we're already spending it on water, just one little half-liter bottle at a time. So I think the water system has done a great job, but its success has made it invisible. We never think about it. And you don't maintain something, you don't take care of something that you never think about, never see. You know, how often do people think about their roofs? Only when they start to leak and need to be replaced.
Yeah, and thanks to your reporting, we can hear the steady kerplink in those pots and pans and buckets under the leaky roof of our public water infrastructure. We've been talking with Charles Fishman, author of The Big Thirst, a timely and positive look at water issues today and paths to a sustainable water future. Learn more at his website, thebigthirst.com. To find more articles and broadcasts on water, design, policy, and related issues, be sure to tune in to Circle of Blue online at circleofblue.org. This interview was produced by Travis Miller. Our theme is composed by Nadev Khan, and Circle of Blue Radio is underwritten by Traverse Internet Law. Join us again for Circle of Blue Radio's 5 and 15. I'm J. Carl Ganter.